Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app. The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Good morning and welcome to the podcast. Today's Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. I'm Anita Riota and I'm filling in for Justin as he enjoys some vacation time. On the podcast today, I speak with Tim Watts, CFO of Shield Therapeutics, ticker STX, about the company's final results from 2018, focusing on the company's lead asset, Feraccru, and what its positive results in clinical trials mean for the company. Then I caught up with Rob Proctor, CEO of Audioboom, ticker BOOM, to learn more about how the company succeeded in delivering record revenue this quarter. Then, as always, don't miss out on today's most liked RNSs and most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform. Enjoy.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
I'm now joined by Tim Watts, CFO of Shield Therapeutics. Pleasure to have you on, Tim. As I mentioned, I've spoken before with both Carl and Mark, so it's really great to chat with the team from every facet.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. So before we delve into your quite positive annual results, can you give our listeners, particularly anybody new to STX, some background into what you and your team do?
Okay, so Shield is a relatively small pharmaceutical company, and we have developed, and we now have it approved in Europe, a novel oral product for the treatment of iron deficiency, which is a very widespread problem that many people suffer from around the world. And it addresses the drawbacks of many of the existing therapies. So we have this product. It's called Feraccru. It is approved, as I say, in Europe for the treatment of iron deficiency in adults with or without anemia. We have commercializing it in Europe by an out-license agreement, which we have with Norgine, who are a mid-sized pharmaceutical company with a big sales and marketing presence in Europe. And Feraccru has been submitted for approval with the FDA in the United States. And we should hear by around the end of July whether or not the FDA are going to approve the product, but we are at the moment cautiously optimistic that we should get an approval.
Right. So it's about your leading asset, Feraccru, that I'd like to sort of focus on. You received positive results for the phase 3 study of Feraccru versus a placebo, which is pretty critical for any drug. And it seems that the success is being reflected in various aspects of your business model and strategy. First, I'd like to talk about how you've seen this success impact your market reach with Feraccru.
So, in fact, this was the second, I think you're referring to the chronic kidney disease or CKD study that we announced as one of the results during 2018. In fact, that was a second phase 3 study. In 2016, there'd been a study in inflammatory bowel disease, which also gave positive results. And in fact, it was on the back of the inflammatory bowel disease study that we originally got approval in Europe. But the later one, the CKD, chronic kidney disease study, has enabled us to broaden the indication. The European authorities broadened the indication in Europe. So whereas initially it was limited to inflammatory bowel disease, in March of 2018, the European Commission extended that approval to all iron deficiency, so not just in inflammatory bowel disease, not even just in the chronic kidney disease, but all iron deficiency. And that what that does is it opens up the market. We estimate there's something in the region of 40 million people in Europe suffering to a greater or lesser extent from iron deficiency. So it really does open up the market to us very substantially. And therefore, our commercialization partner, Norgine, have that entire market to aim at.
Right. And your commercial partner has also begun efforts, from what I see, not just across Europe, but in Australia and New Zealand as well.
Norgine has started promoting in the UK and Germany, where it's approved across Europe, but in the UK and Germany, you can generally launch more quickly because you can set your initial price. Whereas in the other large markets in Europe, France, Spain, and Italy, you need to go into a process of negotiation around the pricing and the level of reimbursement that the local authorities will give you. So we're not fully marketed across Europe yet. And in fact, in Australia and New Zealand, it isn't yet approved. So there is still going to be a time before those markets start to come on stream.
Okay, great. Thank you for that clarification. So where do you think the focus will be for the rest of the year in terms of these different markets we were discussing? Is it really an expanding in Germany and the UK, or really getting more access to the other European markets we talked about? What do you see as sort of the priority for the rest of 2019?
So we believe that Norgine will do is prioritize growing the sales in the UK and Germany. In parallel, they'll get into those negotiations I was talking about. But we've recently, just a month or so ago, announced the results of a head-to-head study where we put Feraccru against an intravenous therapy, and that's produced some for us great results, in that the results were that showed that Feraccru was non-inferior to the intravenous therapy. Now, what we believe Norgine will want to do in their pricing discussions is to be able to go and say to the French and Italian and Spanish authorities, look, here is a product which isn't just, in our view, probably better than the existing oral therapies, but it's non-inferior, a slight technical term, but it's non-inferior to the intravenous therapy. Therefore, you should give us a good price, you should reimburse us. So that'll take time, and that head-to-head data has only just come out, and in fact, we're still pulling the the official clinical trial summary together. So they don't yet have all the ammunition for those discussions. So we're guiding the market to think that actually we won't see the French, Italian, and Spanish launches during 2019. We might, but if it's likely to be towards the end of the year if it does happen.
Do you think 2019 could be the year STX starts to engage more seriously with China and the Chinese market?
Yes, and we have said that we're looking to out-license the product around the world, and China is clearly a major market, and it's becoming a much easier market to do business with than it was, say, 5 years ago. And we have started discussions with companies who might be interested in taking on the product in China. There will be a need to do a phase 3 study using ethnic Chinese patients. So it can't instantly be launched in China, but we think it is possible that we could do an out-license deal in China during 2019.
And speaking of very large markets, you mentioned earlier that Feraccru is awaiting some pretty important decisions from the FDA in the U.S. in July. Could you tell us more about what you're waiting for and what opportunity this presents for Feraccru?
Yes, we submitted a new drug application, an NDA, to the FDA in the early October of last year. And the FDA told us in December that they'd accepted that application and they would conduct a review, which should be completed by the 27th of July 2019. That's the so-called PDUFA date. Now, we are cautiously optimistic that Feraccru will be approved at that stage. It's not a given, but as the product is approved in Europe, we're getting real-life experience there and has a a track record in its clinical studies of good safety and efficacy. As I say, we're quietly confident that we'll get an approval. Now, if we do, that opens up clearly the very important US market to Feraccru sales. The US market is generally the biggest market in the pharmaceutical market in the world still, by volume and also price. And so that's very important to the product and to the fortunes of the company. And what we're looking to do there is out-license the product to a US partner, and that's a process which we're really just starting. And I think what we would envisage is that it probably would make sense both for Shield, but also for a commercialization partner in the US, to have a deal that completes perhaps a little bit after the approval, so that both parties know when the deal is done that the product is approved and ready to go. So we're gonna, that's probably the most exciting activity and potential news for the company as we get into the second half of the year.
And a slight shift in direction now. How have you seen the progress that Feraccru has made sort of showcase itself in your overall company financials?
So at the moment, the sales and the royalties that we get from the sales are modest. And you can see that from our the RNS that we put out with our preliminary results. But what has been very significant in 2018 is the fact that Norgine paid us an £11 million upfront on signing the deal. So that meant that whereas we had in 2017 around £600,000 worth of revenue, in 2018 that's jumped to 11.9 million, 11 of which was the upfront. So And that's all Feraccru related. So in that sense, it is clearly Feraccru has been made a very significant difference to our revenue position in 2018. Clearly, in 2019, in the absence of any other deal, if we don't do any other deals, the revenues would come back down to a lower level because we will just see the royalties from the sales in Europe. If we do other deals in China or the US, then there may be substantial upfronts for those deals as well.
What else would you say that Shield will work on in 2019 outside of the Feraccru space?
The main goal is Feraccru. It is our lead asset by some distance. That said, we do have a product or product candidate in our pipeline, which we call PT20. It's a phosphate binder. And we are planning to do some formulation work on that this year, which, if successful, and we're again cautiously confident that it will be successful, then that formulation would be appropriate for a phase 3 study that could be started probably sometime next year. And it would be the formulation that, if that phase 3 study was successful, you would take forward into commercialization. So we're going to be doing the formulation work. At this stage, I think we would probably say it is likely that at that point we would look to out-license the product. But again, that's clearly a little way off at the moment. But so Feraccru is the main priority. But we want to start moving PT20 forward if we can, because we think that's a valuable opportunity. The phosphate binder market is large and growing, we think we have a useful asset, a valuable asset in our pipeline there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and best of luck with all FDA related things in July. And we look forward to hearing more from STX.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Of course.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
I'm joined now by Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom, which reported today that Q1 of 2019 has delivered record revenue, up 180% on Q1 of 2018. So congrats on the news, Rob, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, no worries. Good to be here. Yep. Thank you very much. It's been a good quarter.
Yes. So I do want to break down this record revenue. But before that, for anyone listening who might be unfamiliar or new to Audio Boom, can you give us a brief overview of what your company is all about?
Yeah, for sure. So we are kind of an end-to-end podcast platform. But our core focus is on making content and selling advertising. We have great technology for storing, distributing, and great relationships with the likes of iTunes and Spotify and all of those guys for distribution. But really, we're about making content and selling advertising all around digital audio and podcasting.
Right. So actually, your results really reflected this emphasis on advertising, and they showed an increase in both brand advertiser count and premium advertising impressions. So could you say a bit more about how these two factors play into your business model and what we should take away from the rise in these numbers?
Yeah. So, I mean, we actually use three important KPIs. One of them not on here because it's kind of an internal one. So it's a combination of your brand count going up, hopefully going up on a monthly and quarterly basis. So that's more brand advertisers working with you proactively through whatever the reporting period is. And obviously you can see ours has grown, you know, substantially over the last year and even quarter on quarter, which for us is amazing because, you know, normally Q1, with like most advertising driven businesses, it's quieter than Q4 of the year before, just because Christmas is obviously peak advertising time. So to have grown brand advertising over that period is huge. The next thing we really look at is kind of the sell-through rate. So, okay, you've got the brands, you've got all this inventory or listens, that inventory is growing as well, but how well are you selling that inventory out? So it's okay having great inventory, but really it comes down to the sell-through rate. So for our top 10, 12 shows now, we are, I think, just above 80% sold out for the whole of 2019 already. So our job now is obviously to push that sellout rate through shows, you know, 15 through 50, and then 50 through 250. So we're doing a lot of work around kind of networking and bundling to put shows of similar content genres together and blah, blah, blah. Just got for more reach and scale, because obviously those top 12 shows are the ones that have the biggest listenership, things like Formula One and No Such Thing as Fish and Undisclosed and Case File. Huge shows. So all the advertisers want to be on the huge shows because we're still a native market. So we have to do an increased job on showing value in what we can do through 250, so we can increase the overall fill rate above 75%, literally across that 250, and then you'll see that the revenues will fall in line because of the growth in our eCPM or CPM rates. So the amount we're getting for every 1,000 adverts, it's just up phenomenally through year on year, but also quarter on quarter. So all of those four KPI we use internally, but actually just filter straight through to the bottom line.
And part of what you were saying was when you have these sort of key factors in place, what matters is how well you can deliver on them. And another number that increased was your revenue per 1,000 listens, which I feel is a good metric of that. And that was up 67%. Could you say a bit more about how you see that tying in with this surge in advertising? And how do you plan to keep this number growing?
Well, I think interestingly, eCPM is, as I said before, it's a key number for us. So what's our yield per 1,000 adverts? I think in terms of the future and what's that eCPM number going to do, I think what's really interesting is, like most digital verticals, the early adopters in terms of advertisers are the performance-based advertisers. So ones that can send you to a vanity URL, or they've got, a promo code or something like that. And then you can, you know, easily measure how effective it is, which is great. What we're seeing now, and we're only just seeing it, is the start of big brand advertisers coming into the space. And with those, obviously, you know, the the supply and demand kind of a push and pull there. There is not enough premium tier one advertising space for the volume of brands that are now coming in. So, you know, as well as seeing inventory growing and more talent coming into the industry, I think advertising is actually outstripping availability. So I could see that eCPM growing through 2019 and 20 still. But also we'll just deepen the roster of available inventory. So we're just getting a better spread across all the podcasts as well.
Mm. And another important number that seemed integral to the success that you're seeing is you've had a high number of contract renewals with your content. How are you ensuring that the content you're able to bring to Audio Boom stays on Audio Boom?
Well, I mean, that's always the tricky bit. I mean, we have, if you like, three types of content that we work with. So first is established tier one podcasts with a built-in audience via the RSS feed. And those are the guys that we go out and proactively try and get from other networks. And if we've got them, we work very hard to keep them on our network. The easiest way to do that is to give them more money than the other guys can on a regular basis. And, you know, our sales guys in New York and the UK do an amazing job, as you can see from the growing eCPM. The other way we do that, we are becoming pretty skilled now at estimating gross revenues from any given established show across a year. So when we're going into pitch for a show, we can very accurately calculate what we can pay them as an upfront or as a minimum guarantee, both of which are recoupable back to us across the life of the contract before we do the revenue share. So it's kind of a no-risk deal to Audio Boom if our forecasting is correct. And, you know, we've been at this game 13 years in total, but I mean, I guess the last 3.5-4 years proactively in that end of the market. So we're pretty much winning everything that we go in for right now because our forecasting is so good. Therefore, we can give good upfronts and people know what they're getting. The other two key areas for us in terms of content are co-produced content, where we have higher margin because we're doing more of the work. So like Formula One Beyond the Grid, that's a co-production. Formula One gets all of the raw files and interviews out at the races. It comes back into Boom. We edit it back together. We do the soundscaping, the distribution, and the media sales. But then we keep a higher proportion of that revenue. And then our owned and operated content, so stuff that we just make for ourselves, where obviously we don't have to worry about it going to another network. It's all ours. And we also make a higher margin off of that content as well. So our job over this next 18 months, 2 years, is to switch the sales mix. So we're still driving forward on tier ones, but as an overall percentage of revenue, co-productions and owned and operated will get bigger over the course of the next 2 years.
And in maybe it's going to become a part of this strategy. But I was also curious, in your results, you said you've signed a quote, enhanced global commercial agreement with Spotify. Can you tell me a bit more about this partnership and how is this version different from previous iterations of the agreement?
Yeah, I think, we have a good relationship with Spotify, both in the UK and out of the New York office. You know, and Spotify a year ago was like 0% of our listens. I think it's about 15-17% of our listens today from nowhere. And that's a new 17% literally straight on top of our business. So, you know, Spotify is massively important to us. I think as they've got more into podcasting, they become more au fait around the commercials of podcasting. So we've always retained 100% of the in-read advertising that we deliver in the podcast. But they've obviously got their ad-supported model. Our new integration allows us to run our own pre- and post-roll advertising through and into that delivery platform as well. So it means we can grow our revenues, and it was about revenue shares and all of that good stuff and how we make that partnership work better for both parties, but also just to drive listenership, because it's all about volume at the end of the day. And exactly the same with Spotify India, now that they've launched out in India. You know, we're obviously work with Spotify there. We already work with Saavn, who is currently the biggest music platform in India. And we're just about to start working with Gaana, who are number one, number two with Saavn in that market already. So I guess within 3 months, we'll have the three biggest distribution platforms along with iTunes in India.
Wow.
And then we can really go after the content. We can really go after creating our own content. Some of it exclusive for those partners. We already do that for Saavn already. So there's a whole content production side to go out there, as well as the media sales side, now that we've nailed distribution.
That sounds all incredibly exciting. I'm wondering, lastly, is there anything else maybe that isn't apparent in the result, or maybe to an outsider reading the result, that you would say has played into this record quarter?
Well, I guess, you know, what's that? Rising tide raise all boats. So, I mean, the industry itself is growing tremendously. We'll probably see, I don't know, 40, 50% year-on-year growth this year. As an industry, as you can see from our numbers, we're well in excess of 100% growth, so we're outperforming that market. And I think it's just the strength of our all-round offering. So, yeah, we've got great technology, we've got great distribution. And when we go and talk with a co-production partner like Formula One, that's hugely important because, you know, they do what they do and they do it brilliantly. Do they want to make podcasts? Do they need a platform? Can they distribute it? Have they got their relationship with Apple iTunes and Google Play and Spotify? You know, yes, they could, but no, they don't at the time that they launch into it. We bring all of that as a true end-to-end service. And right now, we're pretty much the only company in the market that does that. So, you know, we compete with strong players in each of those four different buckets, from media sales to distribution, hosting, and content creation. But when we talk to co-production partners, we can deliver to that established publisher or broadcaster everything that they need to get into the podcast space. And right now, everybody wants to get into the podcast space.
Yes, I do say I'm appreciating how sort of meta it is for us to talk about podcasts on a podcast. So if anything, it's proof of what you're saying. Well, thanks again for taking the time. Congrats on the news. And we look forward to hearing more from Audio Boom very soon.
That's great. Thanks for having the podcast. And hopefully more to come through 2019. It's going to be a big year for us, for sure.
Of course. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And for today's top five most followed companies in the past 24 hours on the Vox Markets platform. At number five, we have Bidstack Group, ticker BIDS. At number four, we have Block Energy, ticker BLOE. At number three, we have i3 Energy, ticker i3E. And number two, Jersey Oil and Gas, ticker JOG. And at number one, we have Zeros Technology Group, ticker XSG. And for the top five most liked RNSs. And number five, we have AsiaMet Resources with their participation at Minds and Money Asia Conference. And their ticker is ARS. At number four, we have i3 Energy, ticker i3E, also on our most followed, reporting holdings in the company. At number three, we have Sound Energy PLC, ticker SOU, as they discuss their rigless well testing timing update at their TE10. At number two, we have Angus Energy PLC, ticker ANGS, as they discuss operations updates and their schedule for work at Brockham. At number one, we have Bidstack Group, ticker BIDS, as they inform investors about an advisory committee being established. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll be back with more news tomorrow morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.